I invite you to turn to the back of your bulletin where you will find both readings from this morning, but as you'll soon discover, we are going to be focusing on James for the remainder of our summer. This is how that occurred. Last week, I was coming to the end of my vacation, and I realized I need something to guide me through the summer. I need some kind of series that's going to allow me to know where we're going to land each week as we go through the remainder of this summer. And so I got my New Testament out. I read through a number of books trying to figure out which would be a good place to start. I looked through old series, seeing if there's anything I could revise and renew. And I kept coming back to James. And I read through James a number of times, and I realized that James is perpetually relevant. It's always applicable because James focuses on trials, which are a constant part of life. There are things that we constantly go through. And so on Monday of this week, July 4th, I chose to go through a series on James. Tuesday, I came in, first day back from vacation, and put together the liturgy we just went through. That was all before this crazy week hit. The week that we know was full of anxiety and trials, both personal and social. It was before the two racially charged police shootings. It was before the Dallas massacre. It was before the unrest at the protest, which continued even into last night, if you read the news this morning. And I realized anew how important James is, because this week was full of anxiety, a frustrating week, a disappointing week, a week that provoked outrage. It was, for all extents and purposes, a trial. And in the midst of trials, we have temptations to lose faith. We also have the opportunity for tests that will strengthen faith. James is the half-brother of Jesus. He's the leader of the church in Jerusalem. He is a leader of a church that was scattered because of persecution in Jerusalem. And he's writing to those Jewish Christians that have been scattered because of their faith in Jesus as Messiah. When they've been scattered, they are moved to places that they're not familiar with. And so many of them are going through economic challenges. They all are experiencing trials. He wants them to view their trials in a very unique way, in a way that almost seems naive, particularly when you consider in verse 2, he says to these dispersed Jewish Christians, "My brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind," are you ready? "Consider it nothing but joy." Now, the one thing you can know about James, he's not a naive idealist. He has inherited a Jewish tradition of suffering. A tradition that we heard in our first hymn today, that very minor hymn about knowing God in the midst of suffering and sorrow for our own sins and for being caught up in a sinful world. And yet, not being a naive idealist, he wants them to view their trials through the lens of faith. And so when he says, whenever you face trials of any sign, consider or rethink it or understand it this way, he invites them to understand their trials as nothing but joy. And we want to wrestle with that this morning, because trials are something that we all face. Some would even define all of life as a constant trial. You've heard phrases like, life is hard and then you die. I could use stronger language, but I won't. But there is language like that, that life is nothing but a hard and difficult trial and then you die. Well, James is aware that life is full of trials. That's why he says in verse 2, whenever you face trials of any kind, meaning small and big, minor, major, personal trials, social trials. And he says it in a way that you know it's inevitable. Whenever you face trials of any kind. He doesn't say if you face trials, assuming that, well, maybe you won't. He instead says when. It's not if, it's when. And for James, the trials that we experience are tests. The Greek word he uses, which we translate both trials and temptations and test, is the Greek word perasmos. It's translated in both of these ways, and some people want to make a nice, concise difference between trials and temptations. And they'll say, trials come from outside, temptations come from within. But they're actually more inseparable than that, because every trial we face that comes from without involves a temptation to lose faith within. And every temptation we experience is actually a trial. It's a test. It's a challenge. So all of these things, these trials, these temptations, they're all tests. But what James seems most interested in is not in explaining why trials happen, at least not here. Later on, as we go through the book, he will be. Your lust that wage war within you and the temptations that come to us. He'll talk about how these things happen and why. But here he wants to focus particularly on how we go through it, with the attitude with which we approach the trials. And that's where he uses that phrase that I would consider would be troublesome if you came to me in counseling. If you came to me in counseling and said, verse 2, hey, Rich, I've got trials of any kind. And I were to immediately say, hey, brother, hey, sister, consider it but joy. You'd probably turn around and leave the office. You'd probably say, that's it. You know, I'm done with you. But this is how James has started out his letter. And it's not just joy. He says, consider it nothing but joy. To be entirely joyful. So James is not only warning us, don't lose faith. He's saying, actually, don't lose joy. Don't lose the joy in the midst of the trial. Well, how could he possibly say that? Well, he's very clear in why he says it in verse 3. Here's why you can consider it nothing but joy. Verse 3, because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance, perseverance, patience. Your faith, as it goes through these trials, is strengthened and becomes even more lasting and stronger than it was before. And verse 4, if endurance has its full effect, then you become mature and complete, lacking in nothing. And when that has its full effect, verse 12, blessed is anyone who endures temptation, such a one has stood the test and will receive the crown of life. So he's able to see joy in the midst of his trials because he understands all of these trials are producing an enduring faith. And for him, that's what matters more than anything else that he can imagine. That enduring faith results in two things. And here's the one that most of us focus on, a crown of life. That someday the trials will be over, we'll be finally redeemed, we'll be saved once and for all. We'll have that crown of life and it'll all be behind us. But there's a second thing that James wants to focus on, and it's more important than the crown of life because none of us are dead yet. We're not there. But we do have a life to live in the midst of a world full of trials and challenges, and that's why in verse 4 he wants us to know the full effect of endurance is that we'd be mature and whole, lacking in nothing. So for James, faith is something that is not just a one-time act where you believe a certain thing and all of a sudden you're fine. For him, faith is a muscle that has to be stretched and tested and challenged. And through the trials that come, it becomes even more strengthened. And through steady, lifelong perseverance through trials, we have a completed product. We have a goal of being mature and lacking nothing that would authenticate our faith. Which brings us back to James' crazy statement, consider it joy. How do we consider it all joy? Well, the joy's not in the trial. Trials are trials. They're hard. They're frustrating. They are difficult. There's nothing joyful in the trial, but the joy for James is what he sees is the silver lining in every trial. That it's producing something. It's producing a faith that endures, a faith that lasts. And when our faith becomes stronger, James assumes we should have joy. We should have this sense of deep meaning. Joy is not happiness. Joy is a sense of deep significance and meaning. That what I went through has value, not because of the trial itself, because I've looked through the trial, and to that faith that endures, that lasting faith that God is accomplishing through this very difficult and challenging trial. Now, because it's hard to know joy in the midst of the trial, James goes on further. He's not naive, as you'll see. In verse 5, he says, if any of you is lacking in wisdom and how this trial is actually causing my faith to grow in endurance, he says one simple thing. He says you need to act on faith. You need to pray. And the beautiful thing he says is if you ask God in verse 5, God who gives to all generously and ungrudgingly, it will be given you. But there's one qualification. There's one condition. But ask, verse 6, in faith, never doubting. For the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. For the doubter, being double-minded and unstable in every way, must not expect to receive anything from the Lord. The qualification is we need to have faith. But the faith is in a very specific thing according to James. It is faith in verse 5 in a God who's always good. In the midst of trial, he wants to say, you need to have faith in the fact that God is generous to all. The Greek for generous means single-minded, that God single-mindedly gives, that God's goal is not to give and then to take it back, but God is ready to give, and not just to give to God's favorites, but gives to all. And in that giving, God gives ungrudgingly. We often will give out of obligation. We'll give with a sense that, you know, this really hurts. It's never that way for God, according to James. God gives freely without feeling obliged. God's grace flows in one direction without backtracking or second guessing. And when James speaks of God like this, you must understand James is the half-brother of Jesus. James, so often in his letter, refers back to the Sermon on the Mount. And when he says, believe that God is so willing to give this, he is referring to Matthew 7. Ask and it'll be given to you. It's our gospel reading. Seek and you will find. This is Jesus' language. Knock and it'll be open. He then says in verse 9, if there anyone who, if your child asks, will give a stone, if the child asks for a fish, you're not going to give a snake. And if we could give good gifts, sometimes under obligation, sometimes begrudgingly, if we do it, being sinful, how much more will God give to those who ask? James wants us to approach God with that sense that God is always generous, God is always good, God wants to respond to our prayers asking for wisdom. And that's why he has so much bad to say about the double-minded. Literally in the Greek, the double-minded means two-souled. If you wanted to use something more current, it's to be half-hearted. And of course, for James, being a Jewish Christian, the greatest thing you can do is love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul. And so to be double-minded for James is to be half-hearted. It's to wonder whether God really wants to give wisdom and to wonder whether God really is trustworthy or dependable. For James, there's no doubt that God is trustworthy or dependable, even in the midst of trials. And so he says, when you don't understand, when you can't see how this may be an occasion for joy, you need to ask God. And ask God for wisdom. And one of the things this does is it puts us all on a level playing field. That's why it's very interesting. James all of a sudden starts talking about those who are in a lowly position and those who are in an elevated position. Both of these things depending on one's economic status. Most of those who'd been dispersed, who'd been scattered by persecution away from Jerusalem into the surrounding places, would be in very economic, troubling positions. There would be a few, however, that would be okay. They'd have their riches to depend upon. But one of the challenges in trials is it causes our faith to grow, and it can go all kinds of wrong if it causes us to have faith in our economic status, in our financial security. If our faith is there, then trials tend to pull the rug out even from that. That's why in verse 9 he says, let the believer who's lowly boast in being raised up. You may not have money, but you have a God who is bringing enduring faith into your life through trials. And here's the leveling effect. The rich should boast in being brought low, because their riches are not going to save them in the time of trial. David Platt writes this. He says, James reminds us in these verses that trials have a remarkable leveling effect. If you're poor, you should boast in the fact that your circumstances are actually leading you to trust in God. And in the absence of physical resources, you are driven to boast in your paradoxically rich status as a child of God. On the other hand, if you are rich, be careful. Trials will remind you that money can't solve your problems, and all of the stuff you fill your life with can't cover up your hurts. One day all of that stuff's going to be burned in the fire and you're going to have nothing left. Will your life be built on those physical resources or on the spiritual resources that only God can provide? So he talks about how trials are at work and how trials might be at work in the lives of those who were rich and poor. But he wants to end this section by reminding us of a blessing. Verse 12, "Blessed is anyone who endures temptation." That's the goal. The trials are there. The trials are meant to produce endurance, the endurance maturity. And that maturity has a final goal. Such a one has stood the test and will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love Him. Now, when you think of a crown of life, please don't think of a diamond-studded hat that royalty wears. This is actually the wreath of an Olympic winner, an Olympic champion. This is what James readers would be thinking of, not of kings and queens. They'd be thinking of Olympic athletes who have done their best through discipline and training and growing and using the weights and strengthening their muscles to achieve that which they'd set to achieve, winning the race, standing through the challenge, showing that they have what it takes to accomplish whatever the task was before them. They are the winners. And this is a crown given not to royalty through inheritance. It's a crown given to winners who have struggled for every bit of that win. And what we find here is the way James writes about it is this crown, this wreath, is given to those who love God. So ultimately, this enduring faith ends up being an expression of love to God. James' way of understanding love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind is having the wisdom through prayer to understand with joy that the trials you're experiencing are God's way to increase our faith and to allow us to be enduring, maturing Christians who've remained committed to God in better and in worse, through trials, through good times, have allowed that commitment to remain strong. Which leads us to a couple of reflections, and I think one of the reasons it's so hard for us as moderns to really enter into what James is saying is our measure of success is a bit different than James. Our measure of success is often much different than anything that the Scripture gives us. Do you remember Charlie Sheen? Remember his tirade, and he went out and he had all kinds of women and he was spending all kinds of money and he was just doing crazy risky things, and the phrase attached to him was, "He's winning." Do you remember that? He's winning at life because he got all the gals, he's got all the money, he's got all the comforts. And I sadly think sometimes that might be the measure of our success. How easy do we have it? How comfortable are we? Instead of the measure being, how is our faith growing? In the midst of good and in the midst of challenges. Again, David Platt is so helpful on this. He says, we don't think like this, for we think the goal of life is to be successful or to have a nice job or to get a raise or to achieve a standing in the world, to attain a certain goal or to have a certain kind of family. Then when trials hit in our family, at work, or with some plans we have, they devastate us. But if our goal is to know God and to be conformed into God's likeness, then we can take joy in trials because we can know that no matter how tough these trials are, they are moving us toward the goal. Do you get David's point there? That if the goal really is a certain amount of success and ease, well, trials can never be a source of joy. They constantly take away from happiness and joy. But if the goal in life is, I want to be like Christ, I want to grow in faith in the gracious, generous, ungrudging giving of God, then all of a sudden, any time is a time in which we can draw closer to God. Any condition, any situation becomes a moment in which our goals can still be met. It's interesting to me, you got to remember, James is a Christian, he's a Jewish Christian, so he's inherited a lot of the Jewish tradition, much like the book of Hebrews. That's the other New Testament book that is written specifically to Jewish Christians. And in Hebrews 11, just preceding this passage, there's a great hall of faith. And it goes all the way back to Adam and Abraham and Moses and Joseph, and basically says, all of these people died in faith, and it describes their lives by describing their suffering. Every one of them challenged, every one of them going through numerous trials. You don't read of any ease or comfort. They are all stressed to the point of breaking. And yet they died in faith. And that's why it's called the Hall of Faith. Well, the author of Hebrews ends that Hall of Faith by saying, therefore, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us run with, and here's our word, endurance or perseverance, the race that's set before us. Looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the sake of the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. He considered it all joy and endured the cross. Now, how do you do that? Well, the reason why James can say something that sounds so naive and so unrealistic is because he's saying the call is to be like Jesus, who went to the cross, not happily, we're not talking about happiness, but with joy. Because there was deep meaning and significance in what he was doing. It was important. It was something that expressed the will and the way of God. So the first thing we wrestle with is what is the measure of our success? But the thing I'm hoping that you'll get from this morning's message is a new consideration of trials. James wants you to have a new consideration. Verse 2 is so important. My brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind, here's the new perspective he wants to give you. Consider it nothing but joy. It's not if you face trials, it's when. Because we live in a broken world. And we are broken people. But these trials, which can seem so weighty and overwhelming, are things that God can use in our lives if we, through faith, ask for wisdom in order to understand how God wants to strengthen us. If we settle in our minds that God is generous and good and gives ungrudgingly, and we understand that the goal of all of these things is to bring us to maturity, that we'd have enduring faith, which is an expression of love to God, then all of a sudden we have a different perspective on these trials, and the trials turn to gold as they increase our faith and love for God.